Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. We meet here every 2 weeks to look at Mojo, what it is, how we can work on it, and what Mojo can do for us. It's great to have you here. At the heart of the Mojo Podcast, I strive to bring you stories that are revealing, inspiring, and positive. These are the ones that tend to really grab you as listeners, and these are the ones I get most feedback on. And this week, my guest wonderfully covers all three of these areas deeply and honestly.
For me, Mojo is the days that you feel, you know, you get up and you just feel Olympian and you just want to tackle the day and, you know, the sun is shining. And if you get that half an hour something in to get the blood flowing and the oxygen to the brain, and you're like, right, what's next? Let's go. And that, for me, that's Mojo.
My guest this week is Lara Millward, athlete, entrepreneur, mother, leader, advocate. We actually talk a lot about labels and language in here, so all of these are relevant and very considered. Lara and I explore the importance of her upbringing in Canada, where sporting endeavour was the holy grail, and how exporting this to the UK as a body-conscious teenager was difficult. We talk about how Lara now inspires and supports so many people, especially other women, to take on new challenges, to relish them and conquer the fears which may have been holding them back. As she says, to feel Olympian in their own way. Described by Richard Reed, the founder of Innocent Drinks, as the love child of Superman and Wonder Woman, Lara has boundless enthusiasm and energy for taking on challenges herself. She has run marathons, swam seas, scaled mountains, sometimes all during the same event, such as the Virgin Strive Challenge, which she undertook with Sir Richard Branson. And of that key event in her life, she talked about what nearly held her back from getting involved: fear. But taking on this huge effort has led to more belief and more opportunity coming her way. Lara writes about fitness for the Sunday Times. She set up the Blitz fitness community at the school gates for other mums and launched another successful business in 2019, The Leadership High, which helps fuel performance in leaders and teams, both psychologically and physically. And this episode is chock full of brilliant guidance for anyone looking to take on a challenge or conquer the fears that might be holding you back. Lara is passionate about enabling self-belief, and I think you'll find her enthusiasm, wisdom, and advice really helpful, whatever you're taking on. So let's dive into it, and I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did making it and talking to Lara. Please do remember to subscribe for the new episodes that come every fortnight. And don't forget to check out the back catalogue. The last episode with Professor Damien Hughes has been really popular with great reviews on LinkedIn and Instagram, so thank you for those. And on that, yes, please do take some time to leave a 5-star rating and the holy grail if you could write a short review on Apple Podcasts. It's a real gift that keeps on giving and really enables more people to discover the Mojo Podcast. Right, with that, are you ready for some guest impact? Let's go and meet Lara Millward. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and this week we go over to Southwest London and we are talking about the importance of movement, something that's been fundamentally taken away from a lot of us in the last year, actually. So as things open up, I wanted to get into a conversation around the importance of moving more, and no better person than my guest today, Lara Millward, leadership and fitness coach, athlete, entrepreneur, influencer. Lara, lovely to see you today. How are you doing?
Oh, very well, thanks, Richard. Lovely to see you too, and so great to be part of this series. I love that it's sporting and endeavour, and so it's a delighted to be here.
Well, yeah, I thought this would be right up your street, so great to get you on. And as you know, this is what I always start here. So today, how is your mojo out of 10?
Today, I'd say 6. I think I feel naturally in life, I always feel an 8 or a 9. That's what I'm usually skipping out of bed. But I think actually I felt a bit lately like I've hit a bit of the wall energy wise because of, you know, lockdown and the longevity of it. And I think, you know, one of my friends calls me Tigger, and the bounce in Tigger's tail is less elastic, shall we say, recently.
All right. So you're really noticing in yourself it's a little bit different to the normal you, that Tigger you talk about.
Yeah, I think the people bit, we're all social beings, aren't we? And we love, our brain loves connecting with people, you know, and I just think that I get energy off other people and being part of teams and parts of things bigger than myself. And despite the fact I'm really enjoying my new business, and it's the lack of that extra stimulus and the constant virtual fatigue. And just recently, actually, I thought I was doing really well through January and February, getting through those darker days, and actually feels a little bit jaded, I'd say is the word I'd use. And I know we're all, you know, we all want to, everyone's joking about, oh, no, let's go for a walk, let's go for a walk. And they really do help. And I went out for a walk this morning in the sunshine, which of course does help pick you up. But I can just feel a little bit of that virtual fatigue creeping in, which I'm sure lots of people feel the same at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that, you've given some clues to what Mojo is for you. You're talking about energy in there and movement. Obviously, sounds like it's important to it. What else absolutely. Is part of your Mojo?
Absolutely. I think I define Mojo as, for me, self-belief, confidence, that feeling, you know, you want to get up and tackle the day, and that belief that you can do it. And when I felt like I've really lost my mojo in life is always when I felt really low about self-esteem wise, low confidence, those voices, I like to call them my internal saboteurs, the voices that get in the way that you're not enough or not good enough, or, and they can have overwhelmed me at different times of my life. Mm. And I found that actually the thing that has always been my foundation stone and my stabilizing bit has been physical challenge or movement or sport or activity, which has helped me through all those times. And when that's disappeared in my life, and there's been a couple of really key moments in my life, and I noticed that the lowest I've been is when I have been less active, or that, or I've lost my routine, I've lost the habit.
Right. So you see a real correlation then between, okay, routine, movement, habits, and this sort of low mojo states that you've talked about.
Yeah, very much in myself and in lots of people that I've met. So, and that kind of led me on, and we'll get to that in a bit, I'm sure, but led me on in my business to understand the impact on the brain and our psychology and the way we are, and the link between that physical movement and our brain chemistry and structure, which I find fascinating. But I've definitely lived it and seen people live it and feel it regularly. But yeah, for me, mojo is the days that you feel, you know, you get up and you just feel Olympian and you just want to tackle the day, and, you know, the sun is shining. And if you get that half an hour something in to get the blood flowing and the oxygen to the brain, and you're like, right, what's next? Let's go. And that, for me, that's mojo.
Oh, I love that, feeling Olympian. What an amazing sensation that must be when we get that. And what, yeah, so that sensation, what bubbles up for you when you have that feeling of I'm Olympian today?
Yeah, it's like a visceral tingling sort of, I know psychologists call it that power pose, but you stand straight and you sort of feel like you feel tall. And if I try and be active every morning, it gives me that energy, that heart rate up, and you feel like, right, what's next? I'm ready. Whatever it is, throw it at me. I can deal with it. Good, bad, difficult, not. I feel sort of ready and primed and, yeah, ready to tackle it.
Ready to go. Yeah, love that. So, yeah, we'll definitely come into obviously what you're doing now and your journey to now, and certainly some of those major dips that you talk about in your mojo. And I think it's probably worth kind of going back a bit into your background, and obviously, yes, you know, movement, physicality, sport, being an athlete is clearly very, very intrinsic to you and your identity. When did sport start to kind of show up for you? Because I'm often interested in this, especially actually for women, because I think mm-hmm. there is a bit of a disparity still mm-hmm. between yeah. when boys and girls are kind of exposed to sport and thrown into it. Yes. And I love hearing from women who are, you know, so into sport, and I think have been for a long time, like yourself. So when did sport kind of show up for you?
I agree with you on that point, actually. But yes, when did it show up? I grew up in British Columbia in Canada. And when I look back now in the Rockies, in a town called Nelson, British Columbia, and I look back now and I don't remember being labeled, as in I don't remember being aware of my gender and that being a blocker. So in the playground, we arm wrestled with the boys. We did double Dutch skipping. We did softball, baseball, tetherball. I don't remember ever feeling that I couldn't or shouldn't, or any of the other labels and words that I think get in the way of ourselves when we want to do something. And I started swimming competitively for the local swim team, age 6. And it was just felt every, I'm trying to think of all the positive words I can think of, inclusive, enlivening, empowering, energizing. It was that team spirit. Mm. You trained together, you went off at the weekends to compete together. It just felt, if I'm honest, a giant party the whole time. And I love the community feel. I love the team feel. And it, you know, I started at 6 and continued. We left Canada when I was 12, but those 6 years were quite formative for me. I always felt part of something, always felt there was a sort of greater purpose, but it was just energizing. That's the only word I can think of. It was no great shakes. We were a provincial team, but you know, you got to travel around, and it was, I just think that's so important, being part of community, part of team.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying there, in a community team, part of something greater than yourself, in terms of where people often find meaning and purpose in there. And you find that as a young girl, you know, a 6-year-old, 7, as you were growing up, that must have been incredible.
Yeah.
And then you moved to the UK, did you? When judging by your accent, I'm gonna guess it was UK the next port of call.
Yes, my parents were English, so by the time we left, I definitely had a sort of mid-Atlantic accent. But arrived back in the UK, and that was a real jolt for me, because then I came up against all those different labels. I was the weird kid, the over-friendly kid, the sort of giant girl. I'd grown quite tall and quite muscular by 12, and I stood out like a sore thumb. So I was definitely the weird kid, and I was the only girl that was swimming faster and running faster than some of the boys. And we had, you know, swimming involved Veruca socks in England and going to baths. And there was definitely gender disparity in that. And I felt very, very out of place. And that really did knock my confidence for quite some time. And went on to a girls' school, which I found increasingly difficult, because it felt to me like anyone that did sport was also a bit stupid. You know, the jocks weren't the brainy people, the jocks weren't the academics, and the teachers made that quite clear. Of course, it was a red rag for a bull to me, so I was going to prove myself that I could get good academic qualifications and go on to university. But then those sort of labels and stories, and I'm always really interested in the power of words that we use about ourselves, because as soon as you're labeled and you start to repeat those words, they impact your mindset and behaviors, don't they? So it really started to upset my mojo, you know, get in the way of the girl that was, started to affect the teenager that was coming through, and feeling suddenly very conscious of my body image, suddenly very conscious of being bigger and muscular. At the time, I'm not big now. At the time, I grew quickly at the beginning, but those words started to really affect my mojo.
Right. So the words, and were these words that were coming from other people, or these words that you were kind of creating in your head? I know this is a long time ago and you were young, but did you have a recollection of that?
That's really interesting where that comes from. Definitely a mixture of other people, and then probably my feeling of being one of the few doing sport, one of the few girls. I can remember clearly, you know, everybody going out to the disco and I was still coming home with wet hair from a swim competition. So you start to feel outside group, you know, and it's always that the brain never likes to feel outside of community, does it? And we all like to be in group, especially as a teenager. Every teenager wants to be in with the whoever it is. Your tribe's so important at that point.
I was going to say exactly, your group, your tribe, when you're at that formative age is everything.
Yeah.
And it just, hearing your story, just sounds like that probably what keeps a lot of girls away from sport, maybe in totality, but certainly maybe at a competitive level, because of not wanting to stand out, not wanting to look different. And this, and talking about body image there, that's got to be a huge thing. You mentioned it yourself. What was that doing for you and your involvement in sport at the time?
We're all influenced by what we see and pictures and media and the ideal body image and what the ideal woman would look like. And I was definitely impacted. I think we all still are as women. I think you're often judged or seen as a sum of your parts. And I think that's something we're still battling. I'm sorry to say, and I can see it with my daughter as she gets to 17-year-old daughter going through all the Instagram pictures and every impact that that's having on her. But for me, I think to your point, girls start to be very self-conscious. You go through puberty, you think people are looking at you, people make comments, and that can easily make someone shy away from those comments, the way they make you feel. I can remember feeling, as I've said, bigger, stronger, not small, diminutive, and all the things that I perceive to be feminine. My father was a huge fan of ballet dance, and I knew as a young girl I did not look like a ballet dancer, and I was never going to look like a ballet dancer. And the words of "you're not enough" started to play out, despite the fact I was, you know, as we moved to England, I started swimming for regionals, I started swimming for Surrey. I knew I had some talent, but it wasn't enough. Now, why wasn't enough? Because I felt out of place, it didn't feel the right place for me to be. I don't know where that comes from. It's probably a mixture of society, a mixture of other girls I was with, and then how, you know, our parents really impact us, as Philip Larkin says, and as I, a parent, am very, very aware of everything that comes out of my mouth. But it does impact you, and you hold that story about yourself, and it starts to create and impact your behaviours.
Yeah. Yeah, the words we're using to ourselves, the story we're telling ourselves is huge. And kind of as you sort of moved on, you got older, obviously you went to university. I know you studied politics just like me. But you actually did something with your politics degree. You actually got into the House of Commons. Tell us a little bit about that and what brought you to that, because I think that's linked to what we've been talking about in terms of body image.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that was jumping from school, which I find a difficult experience, jumping to Loughborough University. I felt like I could fly again. There was so much sport and so much access and so many other women doing sport that I felt like I'd found my place again,
right,
in the world.
Right.
And I got the balance back of, you know, eating well, moving well, studying well, and it felt a really wonderful time in my life, special time. I had an incredible lecturer called Joni Lovandusky, who introduced gender and politics into our political science degree. And the lecture started looking at the book that Claire Short wrote, What Page Three Mean for Women. And I can still remember the fire in my belly at the unfairness and the wanting to fight against the patriarchy and the way women were viewed, you know, as page three represented. And I left university with, you know, that sort of feeling, right, what am I going to do about it? And I went to a Women into Parliament, Women into Politics weekend at the House of Commons, and several of the cross-party MPs up on stage saying, right then, we need women to do this, that, and the other. We need this, that. I thought, right. I walked down to the front and I said, hello, I'm here. I sign up. You've just said we want women to do this, that, and the other. Right then, here I am. And they sort of looked at me and thought, oh, Lord, what are we going to do with her? So one of them had to offer me some work. It was unpaid to start, but as a research assistant, and I started working with Theresa Gorman, who was a Conservative MP at the time, quite a infamous one for some of the things she got up to. But she was working on an all-party backbench committee for women's healthcare and also a bill for getting more women into parliament. So I started 2 days a week. I couldn't get any other jobs after my degree at the time. So I started one day voluntary and one day giving me some expenses to do some research work at the House of Commons. So that was fun. Mm.
So yeah, this fire that had been lit within you at university, you show up, you're now in the corridors of power,
yes,
as it were. And how was that? Did it feel like, right, I can do something? Because that's often when I talk to people about Mojo, it's when you can see and feel the impact of your passion and your purpose. That means a lot. Were you getting some of that?
No, I'm afraid I felt a little bit like I hit a wall. There was, I mean, it's probably a life lesson in a way when you come out full of fire, age 21, 22, that's how much you can do in those young years, but also that you've got a lot of learning to do. So you realize how much goes on in the halls of power, how small you are in the world. It's a good lesson, and what a long road it's going to be. I found it a little disheartening when I listened to some of the conversations I heard amongst some of the MPs. I saw how individualistic some of them were. And this is just my opinion, you know, nothing, nothing political, but I saw how ego had to be front, right and center if you're going to push your way through politics. And I didn't like some of the things I heard with regard to the general population and the way some of the MPs that I was exposed to at the time. So I found it disheartening, if I'm honest. A good experience in that it was a life lesson. It didn't last that long, probably a year, and I had to find another job at the time to pay some bills. I think the passion for championing women and wanting to help other women feel enough and feel confident and strong enough to take to do whatever they wanted to do in life, that was going to be sort of always part of me.
So moving on again in terms of, you know, career timeline, were you involved? Was sport something you thought, I want to get involved in that from a career point of view, or did that stay as a passion, as a hobby almost?
When I look back, there's been a theme of physical endeavor or sport or health throughout everything I've done, but I've never been someone that took a long-term plan. My husband laughs about it all the time. I sort of doors open and I follow them. I tend to follow my gut, and I love chasing new challenge and new. So I never had a plan. In fact, it did work out that way. I worked with Octagon when they started. It's a bit like IMG. I worked with Red Mandarin, which was a sponsorship consultancy looking at how brands could match with, you know, the values that came through, was it whatever the sport represented, be it football, be it rugby, looking at research and planning beside that. Did a little bit of work with Nike, which was wonderful. And then children came along. And in that gap of motherhood and figuring out what I wanted to do, I think sometimes when things are taken away from you, then you realize what you love the most. And I knew I always loved it for myself. As I sat with young children thinking, I really want to do something. I was in a lucky position that my husband had a good enough job. I didn't have to work, but I wanted to work. But I also didn't want to leave the children full time. So I thought, what is it I'm passionate about? And started taking the mums running from the nursery gate. Just started. I can remember the conversation clearly, the word saying, I can't, I don't think I can. I've never run 2 or 3K. I've never run 5. I can't, I won't. And I said, of course you can. Yes, you can. And we just started this little group. And that's one of the best experience I think I've ever had in terms of feedback. It wasn't even a job at that point. The joy that people got from achieving, from getting rid of those labels and the words saying I can't, getting through it, learning that you can get through it, and wow, I can do more. And that sort of transformation of story, I like to call it, that transformation process. You know, if I was to stop now and say, let's put that against some of the other amazing podcasts you've had, Richard's guests on your podcast, who have had Olympian experience or enormous adventures. But for some of these people, that 5K was their enormous adventure, and it felt like an enormous. And when it might sound small and simple, but they are transformative. Because you start with all of this, I'm not good enough, I'll never be able to, this isn't for me, blockers. And then bit by bit, you chip it away. Like psychologists would say, you chunk it down into small chunks, you get through it. And God, you get that amazing dopamine hit. I did it. The brain loves reward. Wow, I can go again. And you start this amazing experiential learning loop of self-belief and confidence. And I loved seeing that happen in other people. And that sort of made the decision for me. I was weighing up, what could I do next? I still wanted to be around for the children. What could I do locally? And Karen, my business partner at the time, Karen and I called it the school gate business model. We started in the playground. We had this idea. We said, right, we'll start this group fitness thing together near Richmond Park. And we just said, we didn't think too long about it. We just said, right, we'll do 6 sessions this June 2009. Let's see if it happens. And the word went round and one mum told another mum. And 11 years later and 400 and odd people later, and we'd run half marathons and done, but it just sort of snowballed. And we grew this wonderful community in Southwest London called Blitz Fitness. And that took a huge chunk of my mum life, but it was wonderful. And the effect on people, not about their thinness or their abdominals or their shoulder strength, or those were all extra added bonuses, but the confidence, the self-belief, the growth in stature, the mental health, the community, the friendships, the joy, the laughter, adults getting to play in the park. It was a license for adult PE. I loved it.
Oh, amazing. I just feel the energy just going through the roof as you're talking about that. I think the word that is coming up for me when you're talking about that is this sort of sense of conquering something. And you referenced, yes, I've had people on the podcast who have literally conquered walking across islands and walking to the South Pole and in the desert. But as you say, it's what your personal challenge is. And if that's getting up and doing a 5K, having done nothing, you are conquering something.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you're conquering, exactly. I think there's something in yourself there as well. The belief, as you've talked about, that I can't do this. I've put blocks in the way. And here you go. You've removed these blockages for all these people in Southwest London. But it sounds like probably for you as well, was this also having an impact on your belief, on your mojo at the time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. To have created it. And sometimes you don't know it in the moment, do you? Until you I can stand back now and look back with pride. I'm going to be honest. The voices in my head were, you're just a personal trainer. You're just a fitness coach. That's not academic. That's not good enough. You could have been this. You could have been that. And that's the honest truth sometimes with those voices. But the outside bit was, when I stand back and when I look and when people greet you in the street and when you get lovely messages or emails or thank you cards, the feedback was that this growing community of people who were healthier, happier, connected, purposeful, and challenging themselves. And that challenge, I'm a big believer in, if you get through challenge and you use the word conquering, you get through challenge, you grow through that, you get stronger, whatever muscle it is you're challenging. Very similar with the brain. You know, you challenge yourself, you get stronger at whatever it is you're doing. And the more you repeat it, the better you get at it, and you keep sort of moving that dial. And as humans, we're always progressing, aren't we? There, in every industry, in every bit of education, everything that humans do, it's about progress and better. How do we get to better? We can only get to better if we're getting stronger at something. And if we naturally seek purpose. If you have that purpose, even if it is, and I don't mean the word just, even if it is a 5K or a 1K or walking up the hill, it is an experience that you get through. You learn you can endure, you learn you can prevail, and you grow. And seeing that amongst this community that Karen and I grew together was just an absolute joy, and actually led, Richard, as I said about doors opening, things that I didn't plan for, all sorts of doors started opening from that, which was wonderful. I had the lovely chance to meet Richard Reed, who started Innocent Smoothies with his friends from Cambridge, when he had just been talking to Sam Branson and Holly and Sir Richard Branson about the Virgin Strive Challenge. And they had this incredible idea. So to support their charity Big Change, which was about creating change in the UK for children that strive in life, they were going to create a Strive Challenge. And it was, we were going to have to cover an amount of distance under human power only. So I sat at dinner with Richard Reed and he said, oh, you'd be brilliant on this Virgin Strive Challenge. what happens? My head starts going, oh no, oh no, you couldn't do that. Oh no, 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 you couldn't leave the children. You're not, at the time, to put it in context, the first Virgin Strive Challenge was going to be run from London to Dover, row the channel, cycle from Calais to Verbier across France, hike from Verbier to Zermatt, and climb the Matterhorn.
Over
4 weeks, and different sections, we'd have other fundraising participants. But the core team of 10 were going to do this whole distance in 4 weeks. And they invited me wonderfully onto the core team. And I was like, you are gonna be joking. I can't leave the kids for a month. I can't do this. Who am I to join this? You know, they had some, Marion Bartoli was on the core team, and they had other celebrities and wonderful people like Natalie Imbruglia involved. And then of course those, I'm 44 and a mum of two with a part-time business, voices start in my head.
Right.
And then of course, and then I had self one and self two started this conversation over the next few weeks. Yes, you can. No, you can't. But by the time I'd heard about it, I knew this was going to be life-changing, and I knew the people I was going to meet were going to be so extraordinary and stimulating. I just had to say, just do it.
Wow.
Sign the line, say yes, crack on. And however many years later, where are we? 2021, and the Strive Challenge continues. I think in the first 6 years, they raised 6 million for Big Change. And since then, we've gone from the Matterhorn, we've cycled the length of Italy, swum to Sicily, and hiked up Etna. From there, we've gone from Etna to Mont Blanc, and all under human power.
Wow.
You know, crossing countries and swimming between countries, things I never thought I'd do. And when you have done something like that, it is life-changing. It transforms that story. But it also totally fuels that confidence muscle. You know, you feel, I had some Olympian moments. I had some very low moments, you know, 8 hours a day on a bike crossing Italy. I think I've never been so grumpy. I wanted to throw the bike off the mountain. you experience hangry like you've never experienced before.
Yeah.
But the fact that you do it, and so many, and that's the other bit, Richard. I know I'm talking probably too much. Everyone that did it, they weren't necessarily sporty. They weren't necessarily, people were doing things they'd never done before and never thought they could. Some people, just the fact they were cycling for a whole day for 8 hours, some people that they'd hiked up a mountain, and that sense of achievement is palpable, and people grow in stature. One, because it's, well, actually three things. One, because it's part of a bigger purpose. Two, because it has a philanthropic angle, so it's for someone else.
Yeah.
And three, because they've learned so much about themselves and about being part of such a big challenge, such a big community.
Wow. So do you often reflect back? Because when you're at dinner with Richard Reed from Innocent Smoothies, you're offered this opportunity, and yes, part of you is going, wow, amazing. And as you say, self one, maybe, and self two is like, no way, absolutely. Yeah. Say no. What, you reflect back on that conflict that was going on, and how you overcome it? Because I think that in there's yeah, the juice, isn't it? Because you've somehow, yeah, you've got yourself, whether it's your experience, your beliefs about yourself, your values, something got you over the line and said, yes. As you said, I committed, I did it, and everything that's flowed from it.
I think that's a great question. I think I'd learned over the years that discomfort and uncomfortable and struggle can be fuel. So I think I'd learned that. I knew this battle was going on in my head, the battle between the unconfident Lara and the confident Lara, and that the fears, the conversation continued for weeks. Talking to other people helped, you know, trusted others, where you share some vulnerabilities. And I've noticed that as soon as you share, gosh, I'm scared about this, or I'm anxious about this, or I'm low about this, it really is more empowering than you think it can be. I think people often fear, including myself, fear sharing those vulnerabilities. But I literally, a lovely piece of advice I had once, sit with the feelings and see where they go. So I said, right, I'm going to sit with them and I'm going to keep talking. And sometimes I have to say to myself, right, box those up and put them away. They're not, you know, it's not good today. I can't deal with that. What I also knew was not only sitting with the feelings and letting the mind process the fear and anxiety, which whenever the amygdala is in that flight or fight response, none of us can think clearly, was to sit with the feelings and let them process, but also to start the practice. So the way to handle, so I'd say to myself, so what is the fear? The fear is that you won't be able to cycle 8 hours a day. You're inexperienced on a road bike. I was totally inexperienced. And secondly, I really don't like it. So I knew that was going to be a good challenge and a good strive for me. So what can you do to manage the fear of, what are the fears? Are they going to be bad at it? Are you going to fail at it? Are you not going to make it? Right? What does that look like? Now let's try and manage that. Start to practice, Laura. Practice on the bike. Practice the running. Do little bits. Little practices that will help you be stronger and better when you get to that start line. And actually, one of my biggest reflections looking back, Richard, sorry to blow off at a tangent a little bit, is that the hard yards were those bits, the bits when you're on your own and you've got to motivate and discipline yourself. Now, whether you're an Olympic athlete or whether you're, you know, or whether you're just me, whatever it is, the challenge that's ahead of you, the quiet time, the alone time is the hard bit. When the lights are on you, so when we were on the challenge, when the event's happening, that was the easy bit, because there's others with you and you're on the road and the journey's happening and you're living the experience. But the days when it's cold and dark and lonely and you've got to say, yes, keep the discipline, yes, keep the vision, yes, keep the planning, that's the hard stuff. And I think that's a life lesson for all sorts of tasks. But that was a hard bit. For me, it's always a bit the lonely bit. And I found that with motherhood, actually, giving up my job. That's one of the hardest bits I found about motherhood, was the lonely bit. During motherhood, I think I learned that I could have talked more and I could have reached out more. I think, and I look back to my childhood now and think that I was someone, I think because of the way my parents were, I just got on with it by myself and I just trusted myself. So that became a little bit, as we've alluded to earlier, became a bit of a story and a language. I've got to do it myself. I can only trust myself. And I'm actually not going to share. I'm going to figure it out. And I found that that has followed me into adulthood. But as I reflect back now, and especially on motherhood, I could have reached out more. I could have shared more. I could have asked more. I didn't have to feel that I had to do it all myself, know it all myself. I joke a bit about, and I do think women do this sometimes, you don't have to be the goddess of everything. You know, you don't have to have it all sorted.
Perfection.
And, yeah. Exactly. And, yeah. And as a mother, not only are you a great cook and you have the house sorted, but you've also got a job and you're also super fit and you're also label. No, it can be messy. It can be difficult. It can be sad. It can be lonely. And I think the more honest we are about that, the more we help other women. And I know we're going full circle from sport to women and everything else. Coming back to the women piece, I've always said, and I still stand by it, that until women change the language they use about other women, and until we champion each other, then will society change. But we have a massive impact about the words we use about ourselves and to each other. And I still think they hold us up.
Right.
And that reflects on sport and physicality. You know, I listened to a mother the other day telling her daughter she had thick thighs. That doesn't help a child that was really good at horse riding and really good at other things she's doing and is actually terrific academically. And I felt like saying, we could be calling her bright, stimulated, energetic, thoughtful, all these other words to define this young lady, not the fact that she didn't have thin thighs. That's not important. That upsets me.
Yeah, no, language is powerful, and it's a bit of a cliche, but it's so true that if we just sometimes took a second to think about what is it I want to say, what's actually the kind thing to say, constructive in it and important in it and truthful in it.
And emboldening, you know, and emboldening. Yeah. If we're saying as a world, let's have more women in senior positions, let's have more women in sport, let's have more, then let's do it, but let's celebrate it. If we've got, look at the England rugby team, women's rugby team, they do incredibly well. Let's celebrate that. Let's not say they look a bit like the men or they're wearing shorts that are unflattering or other things that have been said. I'm not saying that's true, that have been said about women in sport. Celebrate it, go watch it, view it. You know, let's create the world that celebrates women of all shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, like we should of all people.
Yeah.
And when we do that and we use diversive, inclusive and supportive language, you're actually going to feel better as well. You know how it feels, I'm sure, Richard, to give someone a compliment or to say something that makes someone feel good. You feel great. It's yeah. often a reflection of the person if they're digging at someone or they're using destructive rather than constructive language. It's usually a reflection of their insecurities or their own autobiography.
Well, I was going to say something to maybe just that story you shared about the mother and the daughter. I think it's more going on for the mother there than probably the daughter. But it just seems, because everything you've talked about and the importance of movement, of being physical, it's not necessarily being obviously a competitive or an elite athlete at all, but the benefits that we get from movement. But I think it is important to talk about there are things that are blocking people, especially women in our conversation here, to having that opportunity or in feeling like, yes, I can do this. I'm okay to do this. No one's going to judge me for doing this, and the huge benefit that I'm going to get from it. So that, yeah, I hope for that.
Me too.
I hope for that.
I do think it's changing, actually, Richard. I do. I'm lucky enough to be part of a wonderful CrossFit community, of which there are lots of women and men, and lots of people in their 20s and 30s. I'm 51 now, so slightly different generation. But I see, for one, CrossFit, I think I'm right in saying their membership worldwide is 50-50 men and women.
Wow, they have, right.
They have all sorts of ages. They work with people that are differently abled, if they've got loss of limbs and things like that. They work with all sorts of people. But I've never been part of a sport, and I've done many sports, that can claim 50-50 split. But I see the strength and the athleticism of women that I've met in the CrossFit community in several countries, and the fact that men and women are together and celebrating each other. And I think, for me, it's one of the most joyful experiences I've had from a physical point of view.
Wow. And it actually, it just comes up for me, because I'm not involved in CrossFit, but I have watched it on TV. So I think it was like, you know, the World Championships, but it wasn't right. Here's the men's event. And then next day, here's the women's event. It was all going on together. That just thoughts come to me now, as you say, that it's 50-50. And you mentioned that the CrossFit, and you haven't mentioned you're actually very, very good at CrossFit. top 20 for your age range, I believe, in the UK. Is that the case?
Yes, we've just had the, thank you, Richard. We've just had the, okay at it in my age group. We've just had the CrossFit Open, which is again, a wonderful thing, because anyone in the world can compete. And, you know, I use the word athlete. I'm an athlete because they give you that lovely term. I have a CrossFit athlete number, which again is a lovely label. Mm. And if you label it, you kind of live like it, and you say, huh, I'm a CrossFit athlete. I'm going to eat like an athlete. I'm going to behave like an athlete. It's a nice label.
Yeah.
But yes, we just had the CrossFit Open. Again, virtually done. Some gyms are open in other parts of the world, but you have a set of challenges, of which there are the prescribed or RX, if you want to qualify. At the RX level, there's also scale, there's foundation. So anyone, it's very inclusive, can be part of. And after three workouts, you get your score, and I was lucky to be in the top 20 in the UK, and something like 115th in Europe. So there's the little dopamine hit, because next year, Richard, I'll say it out loud, I'm going to try and get in the top 10 in the UK and the top 60 in Europe, so that I can go on to the next level. But yeah, that'll keep me young.
Wow. And you say lucky enough, but I imagine there's a huge amount of work that goes behind getting that sort of level of fitness to compete at the sort of level, right?
It's the hardest thing I've ever done, I think, you know, having cycled across countries and swum long distance and run marathons, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's multidiscipline, you know, gymnastics, strength and engine, as they call it, or air, the run, row or assault bike work. But yeah, the cross nature of the CrossFit is brilliant and a really good test. I'm finding it really good. You know, obviously I'm in menopause now. I'm not losing muscle bulk. I'm stronger than I was. It's really helped. I've suffered with some panic attacks, some anxiety and some difficult feelings as I lose those hormones. Mm. But this has really helped me, especially the lifting. It's really helped with some of the heat that runs through me and some of the anxiety. And again, that comes back to the point, and you know, you and I have touched on it already, the impact of physical challenge, whatever is challenging to the individual, is so much more than Instagrammable abs or whether you're thin or whether you're this, or whether that. It, the impact, you know, we've just been through COVID. How important is our immunity? How important is keeping ourselves well into old age if there is another pandemic like this? But also the structure of the brain, you know, the more oxygen and blood to the brain, the better the brain functions, the better you can process and function and focus, the greater the size of the hippocampus. You grow more BDNF in the brain, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which helps against depression and Alzheimer's, but also creates more neural pathways. So you are prehabilitating yourself. You know, let's look at investing in our health and prehabilitating rather than rehabilitate, you know, prevention rather than cure. If we see our bodies as, you know, if you owned a Ferrari, you'd put the right petrol in it, you'd look after it, you'd polish it, you'd make the leather nice, blah, blah, blah. Why not this amazing bit of kit you've been born with? Whoever you are, whatever you are, you can, and you can invest in your future physical and mental health. And I'm afraid it is a little bit of hard work.
Yeah.
But nothing, you know, nothing good comes from easy. Challenge is good. Hard is good. Use it as fuel and invest in you and this amazing brain and this amazing bit of kit.
If you were talking to someone, I know you obviously coach lots of people, and someone is, they're struggling and they've got ideas of doing something that might be physical. They know they need to do more. They need to kind of look after that Ferrari a bit more. What is the single piece of advice you would give then to help get past that stuckness?
I would say, yes, you can. And then I'd say, I've got your back. And I'd say that by saying, have someone to have your back. It's so much easier with a buddy, with someone to not just hold your account, but to hold your hand. Sometimes it's so much easier for someone to say, yes, you can. And you make it a little bit easier if you're stuck just taking that one step forward. So yes, you can, someone to say, I've got your back. And the third piece I'd say is make it a molehill, not a mountain. Mm. Don't try to suddenly, and comparative analysis is so hard because we're all seeing images of what fit should look like, what sport should look like, what clever should look like, blah, blah, blah. So you suddenly think, oh, I've got to look like this and I've got to go and run 5K. No, you don't. You can start by walking the stairs regularly or going for a kilometer regularly. Chunk it down, and starting is the hardest. I totally understand that. Changing behavior is so hard. But if you can make small things habitual, they then get easier. And once you've achieved them, if you make them smaller and achievable, you'll do it. And that will help you go, wow, I'm good. I can go again. And that lovely intrinsic motivation, dopamine circle of, yes, I can, makes it so much easier. But being realistic about yourself is hard. It's really hard sometimes because of this comparative analysis. But I'd just say, be you. It's okay to be you. And yes, you can. You really, really can.
Wonderful, wonderful motivation for anyone listening who's thinking about that thing that they've been, you know, I'd like to do, and how do I get started? Amazing. Thank you. And Laura, just to sort of close off with, so thinking about your mojo, and I know it's a little bit lower now, but usually it's a bit higher up. What are the things that you know you have to do every day? Maybe there are three things or so that, and I'm sure they'll involve movement, but what are the three things that I've got to do this to get my mojo to where it should be?
Absolutely. It's physicality, the impact of my body on my brain is so clear to me that when it's not there, what I have got better at is it doesn't always have to be thrash smash. You know, sometimes a walk or a swim or something gentle is just as good and allows the brain to calm. That's something I haven't been so good at because I do like more of a full throttle type of exercise. So movement every day, good cup of Earl Grey tea every day.
Agree with that. I love an Earl Grey.
And somebody to talk to. I think the mojo is, as soon as I've shared, I, you know, often feel it's some of the darkest moments that in life, if you reach out, it can be so rewarding. So if I get in that fog, I'll say to myself, just call that person you haven't spoken to for a long time, or walk around and knock on their door. Do something just slightly different that day, and it always cuts through, you know, anything that might feel mojo-less. But generally, I know I said a six today, but generally, this last year, having had CrossFit as part of my life, having had a new business to do, I am generally about an eight and really, really go below. But I just wanted to say to everybody, I think the virtual fatigue for all of us, you know, I hear everyone, and I feel it too.
Thank you for that honesty, you know, Lara, because I guess because you're so used to being at a certain level, but being open and honest, actually sometimes it dips down. But that in that shows that, and this is how I can get it back up. It isn't a constant permanent state. You know, you can flip it around, which is for me, you know, what I've got out of this is incredibly motivating, energizing, inspiring conversation, and huge advocacy for movement and more movement, and especially we're thinking about women and young girls particularly. Lara Millwood, thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast today.
Absolute pleasure, Richard. I could talk for hours. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Didn't we cover a lot of ground in that one? So much wisdom, honesty and experience shared. Thank you so much, Lara. And I hope you felt the support that Lara offers, the enthusiasm for pushing yourself via hard work to reach your potential, whatever it is you're thinking of taking on. Personally, I was buzzing after this conversation, as my mojo had been on a bit of a dip, actually, running up to our recording, but I was flying afterwards. The power of an energizing conversation. I take so much from this one, but I certainly come back to the power of language, what we say to ourselves and others, such as our children, and aligned to this, the labels that we put on ourselves. As Lara says, if I'm labelled as an athlete, I'm much more likely to behave as one. Now, you can find much more about Lara in the show notes, but do check out her website, laramillwood.com, and her Instagram. Plenty of CrossFit motivation in there. The Mojo Podcast will be back in 2 weeks with more revealing stories and inspiring content. Hit the subscribe button to get the notification. And yes, as I said, please do leave a 5-star rating, and please do write a short review on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps. Okay, until next time, I hope your mojo continues to flow.